Hi, and welcome to the Data Engineering Podcast, hosted by Cynthia. I'm Jason Gould. I'll be looking after the discussion every week. We'll cover a host of topics like DevOps and tooling, programming languages, strategies, and all that kind of stuff. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy it. Hopefully, we'll catch you next time. Hi, guys. Welcome to this Data Platform Podcast. I think we're on, episode 7?
Seven, I think.
Yeah, cool. This week, we're going to talk about data products and the process of developing them. So with me, I have, as usual, Tomo.
Hello.
And I have our head of products here at Cynthio, Goran.
Hi, Goran. Hi, guys.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Our pleasure. So obviously, when we go through working with our clients, we have a process that we have for how we're going to develop a solution for our customer. And a lot of times we see duplication. Certainly from my perspective, we see a duplication of the things we need to do. And that can be sort of a precursor to looking at, do we need to create a product or not? Tom, when we're working with our clients, what's this process we go through?
Yeah, I would say that right now, I mean, as with all new initiatives in software development, data engineering and data platforms are not new as a concept, but new as a concept that is being implemented on projects in cloud. So you have tools, you have some frameworks, but none of them can cover all the crazy use cases that we are working on. So we have different use cases. Some of them are the usual traditional one, like a batch processing of the data or chunks or something like that. But also right now, there is no reason to discard any of the use cases because it can be done. Everything can be done now. And you have tools and services that can actually do everything quite easily. The issue is that you have to use a lot of open source technologies at once. So basically, then you have you come to a bit cumbersome set of technologies that you have to orchestrate. At that point in time, this is happening, let's say, every other week. Someone is coding the same thing over and over again. Since we have that privilege and opportunity to work mostly also as data architects or software architects with our clients, then we notice that these things are happening. So the first thing that engineering mind wants is to optimize. So I want to create a component that can do that instead of engineer. I mean, if it's easy, why should the engineer waste their time and effort and potential to develop something that will just,
And it's good for our customers as well, obviously. It accelerates their time to value.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And everything else. So
time to market for data is being definitely shortened that way. And then, you start to think about, okay, this is what I can put together, those three components, and with the proper deployment scripts and CI/CD, I can automate it and la 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 la. And at that point in time, you come to the idea, well, this would work much better with a lower cost and with much more efficiency and much more control if we create a software product, a software component.
And that, correct me if I'm wrong on this, that could be a product that potential for the future to be a commercial product that we would sell. But more frequently, actually, it's a product we create for our customer to use internally.
Exactly. Yeah, either internally or we just open source the product so everyone can use it. I mean, there are some products that we believe everyone should use. We would strongly recommend using those products. Otherwise, you're going to lose data. And I mean, sometimes since we are a small community and small company, you come with certain ideas and with certain architectural patterns that you want to implement, and then customers are looking at it saying, well, we are not sure that we need this, we don't see business value. Of course, in backend software components, it's hard to see a business value immediately. You see a business value when they solve the problem that is causing you financial damage. And then I'm super happy to say that usually after a few months, few iterations, or sometimes even after going to production, we are going back to the products, and then, you know, it's much easier to explain the benefits of using such a piece of software to someone who already, unfortunately, has misfortune to be a bit burned on something. But I mean, that makes it easy. That doesn't make it more enjoyable. But I think that with data products, there is not many on the market. Mostly all data products that we can see today on the market are wrappers around certain technology, like Databricks with Spark, like, you know, Airflow, which is actually a great product, just implemented on top of Python possibilities and some objects, and that's more or less it. You don't have end-to-end frameworks that you can use. I mean, you can try and find and buy a tool that does all the things, but then again, you have everything in one tool, which makes it a bit hard when you want to move away from that tool, or when you want to store just the business transformations and your knowledge and everything that you put together in that piece of software. This is why I think that our products should always stick to solving technical issues, not actually logical issues.
Yeah, and I would like to also say that, you know, source systems grow in all directions today. So, you know, you have ERP and CRM and production systems, interfaces, APIs, message queues, a lot of sources. Somebody needs to, you know, build a stable, sustainable pipeline in order to hub all the data somewhere. So, yeah, this is where we kick in.
Yeah, exactly. With our products. Because the thing is that when you are writing a pipeline, and if you're going to write it manually, you have all the tools. All the tools are here. Mm-hmm. Now you don't need components. Mm-hmm. But actually, can you test each and every step of your data processing in a way that someone else tests it when creates a component? Benchmarks it, knows all the bugs, tests all the drivers, everything. So that's what I think. I mean, it's not like super innovative idea to create a product that will actually save people time. This is how software usually works. But on data market, there's not a lot of products. That's interesting.
So this goes back to a conversation stuff that we've alluded to a number of times, which is those sort of gigantic, let's use the word legacy systems of, you know, enterprise service bus and integration platforms and all the rest of it. And the issues that come with them over time, which is, you know, difficult to maintain, huge teams of people looking after it, and being trapped in that sort of process. So what we're saying for the products that we look at are ones that are accelerators to a sort of distributed pipelines, aren't they? They're not looking at a single product to solve every problem, because that really just doesn't exist. Whereas when we look at it from the perspective of whatever it is we create is almost standalone within a pipeline, can be reused, but also when it's no longer suitable, can be pulled out and changed for something else.
Sure. Yeah, you described it well. I think this is
that's the first time I've ever described anything well.
I think this is data products that we are focused on. We're not going to create the you know, like graphical user interface data engineering tool. I don't think that we should go for it. There are already, they are great, but we are more focused on the let's say data infrastructure part.
Okay, so obviously then once we've identified that there is an opportunity to create a product, and whether that be as part of a project with a client or ourselves, so we have an R&D labs department here that specifically look at these kind of challenges, and where we see stuff, the same issue over and over again, it's like, is there an opportunity to create something in here, whether commercial or open source, to make people's lives easier, accelerate time to market, time to value for our customers? You know, then what's the process we use to create that? What process do we go through to identify something being good and worth pursuing as a product?
So I would say that our amazing team of architects come with a vision, and they light up a spark on which we can build some architecture mock-up. Mm-hmm. and then perhaps build a roadmap for our development cycle, and then probably implement the proof of concept. And in fact, perhaps even several proof of concepts on different destination platforms, just to see whether it fits.
Cool. So we sort of do some prototyping and everything first to make sure that what we're talking about is viable.
Sure.
Because you can, I'm positive that in our history we've created some stuff before we've just gone, actually, this is never going to work for our customer.
Yeah, sure.
You can make stuff, you're sort of trying to get that fine line between does what we need it to do perfectly and is usable, especially seeing as, our guys are hardcore data engineers. And a lot of our customers don't have hardcore data engineers. We've got to make sure that stuff is easily understandable. So, but after we've done all our prototyping and everything else, I mean, we use an agile methodology to do this. We iterate across lots of different tests and all the rest of it, as we would expect any other software product to.
We would like to adopt to change. We are not afraid to change. Technology changes a lot. Not rarely we see technologies that simply die, deprecate, so we have to adopt.
And of course, as an organization, we also support every kind of environment you can possibly imagine. So, we're running this on all the sort of flavors of cloud platform and on-prem in some cases as well.
Yeah, I think that with this new application servers that came under the name of Kubernetes, each one of them kind of makes it much easier for us. I think that this is the most important thing deployment-wise that happened, that you can actually deploy software packed in Docker containers, and you can deploy it on platforms wherever they are, managed, unmanaged, in cloud, whatever. So it's that I think that was also one of the triggers, or you would say sparks, that kind of motivated us, because we knew that, we can prototype, and I can maybe explain the process. When we have some idea, whoever comes with it, then the first thing is when we create a prototype, we usually use managed services, because this is the easiest and the fastest way that you can test certain technologies. So then you can develop and deploy using managed services or on each of the clouds. Once you tested it out, see that it makes some sense, then we start up the different process of building the cloud agnostic application, which I also think it's even easier if you build cloud agnostic. It's not quicker, but it's easier, because once you build you can run it anywhere.
Exactly.
That I think that's super lucky. We are super lucky. I mean, that you couldn't do that, even with Java Virtual Machine several years ago, you would have so much dependencies on the environment, on application server, that it would be very hard to migrate from one.
This is the part of the conversation where Tomo talks about getting up in the middle of the night to go to work, and he had to trudge through the fields, and because he's an old man. So he's used to, when I was a kid, you couldn't do any of this kind of stuff.
No, it was horrible. I remember each deployment in Friday afternoons.
Manual,
that would
right?
sometimes, yeah. That would sometimes go through the Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
And then roll back, because we are not ready.
Exactly.
Next Friday, see you next Friday.
Because the
SYNF.
Yeah, last step failed and
roll back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, but I have a question for you, Goran. So we're using Agile methodology, we're using Jira, we're using Confluence. We can mention those two technologies, because this is something that
Common tools, yeah.
Common, and we use them. We use them, I can tell you, in almost the same way as we would use them on projects.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's interesting, or do you think it's natural to develop? I mean, on project, we are deploying project solutions, sometimes heavily customized, sometimes with a lot of input, without functional specification and all the things. And then we are using the same methodology and same setup to develop products where we actually know what we are doing in the sprint. We don't have to wander and adapt that quick.
Mm-hmm.
But you still find it...
I would say that on products, we are not so constrained with,
process.
With the process, yes. Mm. So we can be very, very flexible, and we can adapt that agile process to fit to fit us. As a matter of fact, we have several teams working here on products, and none of the teams work the same. So this is really something amazing to.
It's funny, actually.
It's interesting.
We were talking. I was talking to one of the one of our team members on this topic the other day. And said we're not doing agile anymore. We're not following. And I said, okay, so you are agile, because I know that you assess and change and move as you go through. But the bit you've stopped doing is a lot of the ceremonies around it. And I think because you're all sat in the same room and you know what the challenges are and everything else, then those ceremonies that you would follow in a scrum process, for example, become actually less important, because you're actually being agile rather than doing agile.
You're going to pile up haters. Because people who are agile like aficionados or agile evangelists, they insist on ceremonies.
Well, I would say it depends also of the stage that we are currently in. So if we're in a final stage, we might not want to do so many ceremonies.
Because the problem's well understood.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So,
but the emotions.
Yeah. But you
so,
know,
so Cynthia are agile with a small A, not a big A.
Small A, that's correct.
Yeah, you know, it's just a matter of being as flexible as we can. That's it.
Super.
And I mean, I've seen myself in some of our product development as well, that we're not actually afraid to change technologies in the middle of development. We decide something, well, actually, this isn't going to work for us. And this, for me, is super interesting, because pretty much everywhere I've ever worked before, that would never have really happened. With a few exceptions. You know, we've decided we're going to use this technology to fulfill this, and you know, even though we might know it's never going to work properly, we carry on regardless. Whereas we don't seem to have that constraint here.
That's the beauty of open source. Because otherwise, how would you explain someone who, you know, for instance, again, I'm going to name some software, but every software that I'm going to name is going to be open source. So let's say you have Kafka as a message broker. Kafka is super cool. It can do everything. And then you have Pulsar as an open source message broker. Why do you have Pulsar? Because someone didn't want to use Kafka anymore. They just wanted some functionalities. And I think that we are lucky, because we can change technologies, because they are all around us. You couldn't change technologies if you had to write PEL SQL script. Mm-hmm. I mean, before that you had Pro C or whatever, or you could write Java in the database, but that's more or less it. What else could you do to process that data in the database? How would you do it? Yeah. Now you can use Spark, you can use some kind of a Spark abstractions like data frames. Like you can use Python, you can use Go, you can use whatever you want. In-memory processors, there's six of them.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because this was a topic of conversation we had a few days ago as well, when we were talking about lightweight message brokers like NATS, for example, where you want to include a message broker with your product, but you don't want to have to put Kafka in it.
Yeah, deploy several virtual machines and stuff.
You don't need it.
This, if I sort of go back, this is me now being an old man and going back to when I were a lad. I mean, you know, you had two or three things that would do the job you needed to do, and you had to try and choose the best one in amongst that. And now, especially as you say with the open source, we've got the option to use 20 different things.
Yeah.
The right tool for the job.
And then there are 20 more waiting in line.
Yes, exactly. And that can be, sometimes it's hard. It makes your life hard, because you don't have standard framework. And when you educate people to use something, for instance, if you would have data engineering development framework, DEDW, then everyone would work in it, and you would have enough engineers that can work in that. You know, but what would that be? Who would choose set of technologies that framework would cover?
And it would be super constraining within the space of a year or so.
Yeah, it would be the same as it was before with the large technologies, technology vendors and providers. So it's good that it is like that. And sometimes, as I said, sometimes, you know, people like to complain, that's in their nature, and they say, oh, again, new language, new technology, new whatever. And I'm always thinking, well, at least it's here, it's available.
But this is something else we talk about as well in the organization quite a lot is this sort of approach of continuous learning. Mm. Because, I mean, let's be brutally honest with you, you know, if you know one set of programming languages and technologies, actually swapping to another one's relatively easy if you're the right mindset for learning.
I agree.
You know, if you've been doing exactly the same thing for the last 20 years, that might be a little bit more difficult and scary.
Yeah.
But, you know, actually getting people to learn continuously, and we do this as part of our product development as well. You know, we take a lot of our engineers start in product development because we have such a broad range of things we do in their different cloud vendors, different technologies and everything else. It's a super good learning environment for people.
Yeah, but it's also very difficult for our customers to break free from the legacy system dependency. So it's basically the same thing.
And I think, but I think we're at that, maybe that part in time where we can see the, on the horizon for sure, some companies are already starting the breakdown of those sort of monolithic systems within companies to a more decoupled way of doing stuff. And I don't just mean decoupled as in microservices and all that stuff. I mean decoupling data from the system that it contained in, you know, using message brokers and stuff like that.
That's the key. Because if you just split monolith into microservices with certain application logic and certain function that it does, I mean, you broke silos, but you have 20 more.
And it's funny, actually, because...
If you keep data together with them, then it's like you didn't... I mean, you did something, but it's hard to say.
When you do that approach with microservices that are so tightly coupled, you still have, you have microservices, but they're so tightly coupled together, you may as well have just different object-oriented programming and compiled it into the same executable. Yeah.
They're not microservices anymore, but usually they end up being like that. So that's another story for another podcast, I think. Yeah.
So are there anything that you can think of, Goran, that are traps you can fall into? Have we gone down paths that haven't worked out for us? And, you know, what can we learn from that kind of stuff?
Whoa, yeah, absolutely. I mean, choosing the wrong technology is always a bad thing. But... on the other hand, we gain experience, so it's not that bad. Choosing the wrong path is definitely not a bad thing. It just you know, takes some time, but on the other hand, you gain experience.
You know, for example, in a year's time, you're on a customer site and they say this is what we're going to do, and you go, what? Maybe.
Well, actually,
I have some experience of this.
Yes,
I've been banned on this one before.
That's super useful. I agree. Mm-hmm. That is maybe the most useful thing because I mean, people are similar in way of thinking, and you know, it's easy to fall into those traps.
Yeah, and very often you would find, you know, 10 people in a room debating about something, and then you would get amazing ideas from the ones you wouldn't expect, you know, the youngsters who, you know, don't overthink it.
They don't have the burden of experience.
The burden
dragging them down. I agree.
I've never looked at it in that way before. So basically I need to forget everything
become good again. Sometimes it can be beneficial for sure.
Absolutely.
You have a fresh
approach to stuff.
Fresh approach,
So we could actually then, one of the concepts we don't actually talk about here at all, I don't think, which is fail fast, which is, you know, the sort of concept of do something super quickly, find out if it works or not, and if it doesn't work, pivot. Which obviously we do as an organization, but we don't generally
talk
about
it. We have poor memory, so we forget it quickly. Like we just push it to the side. Or, oh, I don't want to think about it anymore. What have you learned? Don't touch that.
This never happened.
Yeah, this never happened. Well, I think that we have still a good... I mean, still. It's not that many of us. But I think that with certain events that we have internal in the company, like this technology Tuesdays, Tech Tuesdays, where we speak about what we have learned, that we are sharing a lot of information, especially about those things. Not so much about the features that we work on, because people are always focused on the stuff that brought them problems. So whenever you look at any kind of technical presentation, internal one that we have, mm-hmm. The focus will always be on challenges and issues.
Yeah, but actually I think that's sort of indicative of this organization as well, is that we're not so great at celebrating success, but we're more than happy to talk about failure.
Yeah, that's like obsession. Failure, sales,
celebrate
our own failure.
Failure
is our obsession. Yeah, but that's an interesting thing, because then you know, oh, come on, okay, that's interesting. I shouldn't do that.
Mm. No, yeah. I think as an organization, we have this habit of going, okay, so that went really, really great. What's next?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, we tend to obsess a little bit about when something hasn't worked the way we want it to. And we want to make sure that in the future, we want know how to get around that.
Yeah, I wonder how come.
Yeah.
But cool. And Goran, also one question. Mm-hmm. So do you see... So, what we haven't said already, we said it, I think, maybe in previous podcast, we have our components are backend components. They don't interact as much with the customer, with the human, as much as they interact between technologies and they use certain engines.
Mm-hmm. Middleware.
Middleware. We are a middleware company. So I'm thinking, APIs, you know, yes. is it... What do you think? I mean, I know that you have experience with end-to-end applications, custom applications, with user interface, with everything. Do you think, I personally think that for us, being focused completely on backend is beneficial, because we can actually then focus completely on the performance, on the cost, on the efficiency. What do you think if we would kind of start creating user interfaces that would be more oriented toward customer, so customer can just click and not run? I mean, with our components now, you just run scripts,
yeah,
and I don't see any issue with that. But do you think that it would kind of took away a lot of focus from backend to the UI, or generally speaking, what is your observation about developing speed of development when you don't have to develop user interface?
Oh, definitely speed is much greater. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you're losing some. Yeah, on the other hand, front end gives you power to present the product a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that you know, it has its advantages, but probably the backend team should, you know, focus on what we do best.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I also think so. I think that if it's easy. I mean, I'm not ashamed to say that I think that our development is easier than user interface, because we don't have to actually think a lot about how
HCI, human computer interaction.
Yeah. How
it doesn't need to look pretty.
No,
because command line never does.
And it's another set of dependencies and
so
problems.
So Tomo would
issues.
Be very happy to go back to green screen terminal and the opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, which database had better interface than Clipper? IndieBase, come on, it's super easy.
In the end, you know, we will always listen to our customers. So if they really, really want the UI, well, they will.
Yeah, of course. I mean, but the UI that we are going to provide is usually UI that you use to configure and deploy the product. Mm-hmm. I was more thinking about the UI where you have to produce 600 user forms where they will enter the data.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something that I think we are very privileged that we don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Because I've been in a company that created that software. That software is great, but you are much more...
You know, creating is one thing, but maintaining it.
Exactly, maintaining it. And then somebody comes and don't like it and they want some kind of a feature, and which is normal, but it's kind of hard. And I think the software as a service now is taking over the whole world of user applications, at least in some. in some business.
But we're also pretty lucky that we make products to do a specific job really, really well.
Yeah.
They don't try and do too much.
No.
Which reduces complexity for us. Yeah. And it actually, I think, in a lot of cases, gives the customer a much better experience of using our tools.
And decoupling them. I mean, we are obsessive about decoupling. I think that you all notice that. I mean, we have separate application for collecting logs, and we have separate message broker in every component almost. But the thing is that, we have one question to answer once we come to it, maybe in one of the episodes of podcast. In the next one, and that is if we deploy, like if you put together a pipeline using 4, 5, or 6 our components, how do you stitch the logs? How do you get to monitoring? How do you get to observability? How do you see them? Not as each an individual component performing perfectly, but how do you see the whole flow end to end if you have 6 separate robots doing something? Which I'm more than happy to talk about, but this is one of the topics that is, I would say, a challenge for us.
This is
challenging.
Yeah, but it is also a beauty of what we do. So we use bleeding edge technologies and make them work together.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think this is the only proper way to do it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that someone could come. I mean, they are coming, and this is the main question. I mean, I see that as one of the... if I was a customer, I would say, guys, this is really good. I believe you. I like it. I want it. How can I get all of those things playing together under one roof with the common denominator? I want to see them all performing. And of course, we have an answer for that. But then that's, I think, the only... let's say, the only issue that people could have with such decoupled components.
I think this goes to the same sort of stuff in a lot of cases with back-end components. Is you have a log file. You generally don't see that sort of end-to-end flow in a lot of instances. You know, you've got to stitch it together yourself. Yeah. And actually, to be fair, with all of the tools that are out there on the market, you know, and I look at the... Kibana and Elastic and Splunk and everything else, you know, we do make logs available.
Yeah, there's
no problem with stitching all of that stuff together.
No, I'm not saying we have a problem. I'm just saying there's this very interesting topic of monitoring and observability that can for sure be solved with a lot of metadata and with common logging of all components, for sure.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean...
It's probably a whole different topic, though, isn't it?
It is a very interesting topic, and we should definitely talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, podcast 42.
Next week, yeah.
Or podcast 8.
Yeah, yeah. Right,
cool.
Okay.
Any other comments that you want to make? Goran, you've been sat looking like you want to say something.
No.
You're good?
I'm just fine listening to you guys. Throwing him under a bus here. Cool. In that case, I think we're a few minutes in. Oh. We'll wrap up for this this one. Thank you very much, guys, for listening. Those of you that
thank
are,
you.
Thank you guys for joining me here, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
See everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.